D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, and Adam Vingan joined on our phone line, driven by Wilson County, Hyundai.com, by Sportsnet, NHL insider Elliot Freeman, co-host of the 32 Thoughts podcast as well. Elliot, the comments that Barry Trotz made on this station a couple of days ago have crossed our northern border. They've been talked about quite a bit, not just here in Nashville. I've heard it talked about on Sportsnet many times. I know you've listened to that interview every week. You've said it. What are people around the league that you keep in touch with saying about those comments specifically made by Barry Trotz a few days ago?
Well, first of all, they're still saying it is the second best hockey hit of the week on the station. I want everyone to be well aware of that. I think that it just shows that more was expected, more was hoped for. Nobody is happy with where things really began. Barry has said on that hit previously that he's looking for a center, and a top six center is very hard to find. I don't think those are very easy things to do. One of the things I think, though, is I kind of got the impression that the way we're interpreting them is slightly off. Like, I don't think he's going to rip down the foundations and do a total rebuild. I don't think, like, some people kind of, and you guys tell me if you think I'm wrong about this, but the impression I got was that that's not what's on the table. It's simply going to be that some of the players who are in Milwaukee might get their chances sooner than expected.
Yes, I would agree with
that. Like, it's not like he's ripping down the organization. But, the one thing I do think is that, number one, he's not afraid to be bold. So if something bold that he thinks makes sense dropped on his lap, I believe he would do it. But I don't know. I'm trying to look and see, like, who's that player that's available that solves his problem? And I'm not sure that I see an obvious path to that player at the 2C spot.
My question, Elliot, as well, is we know that in this particular league, coaches have short leashes when it comes to struggling. We saw last year what happened with the Edmonton Oilers. They started 2-9-1. They fired Jay Woodcroft when they were 3-9-1. Chris Knobloch comes in, best record in the league the rest of the way, within one win of winning the championship. Should we have any reason to believe that Andrew Burnett should, I'm not saying he's on the hot seat, but if he's on the burner, is it turned up to one? Is it turned up to two? Where should we see Andrew Burnett in all of this?
Well, I would say that, I did not get the impression that Andrew Burnett is in trouble. Barry Trotz was a coach. He understands coaching. I don't think that he's the kind of guy that's going to go out and say, all right, at the first hint of trouble, this guy's out. But I think there is a recognition that this isn't what anyone wanted. This isn't what anyone expected. And if things don't get better, I would say the burner can always become a little crispier, Adam. So, the thing about Trotz is he's a really good guest on your radio station. And I think sometimes it's as important to listen to tone as it is the actual words of what he's saying. And you guys know him. He's calm. He's measured. He doesn't fly off the handle. But what I am hearing is that he's a little bit exasperated. He's a little bit disappointed. This was a season of very high expectations. And, I keep a stat, okay? November 1st of every year, after games on November 1st, four or more points out of the playoffs. In full seasons in the salary cap era, there have been 70 teams who've been four or more points out of the playoffs on November 1st, and 10 have made it. And this year there were two, Nashville and Chicago. Now, I think that the Predators are good enough. I look at their talent. I really like them. But there's no question that it's been disappointing. It's no question that everyone is struggling to find a spot at that number two center position behind Ryan O'Reilly. There's been too many games like that one the other night. Not last night. I thought you guys actually played really hard and probably deserved a better fate. But more the Monday game against the Kings. You're out of runway for bad games now. And or performances that aren't acceptable now. And I what I sensed was like a little bit of exasperation. Like I can't believe, like, almost like I can't believe we're in this position. And the longer that goes, the more the scrutiny and the spotlight and the heat gets put on everybody.
Elliot Friedman is with us. And Elliot, I think it's a good point that you make because I think you listen to most, if not all, of the interviews. I think it's so easy, especially in the world we live in, if somebody takes a sentence out of a Barry Trotz interview, and you know Barry Trotz well, he is going to give you lengthy, detailed, nuanced discussion. But yes, if you pull one word, one sentence out there, and it includes rebuild, then you're not really getting a full picture. It is like my English teacher, if I tried to read just the Cliff Notes, and then my teacher said, okay, here's the pop quiz, and I'm just going to tell you right now, if you read the Cliff Notes only, you're going to fail this quiz. You know, there is something to reading the whole article or listening to a whole interview and not just taking one clip.
Well, Willie, you just explained why my high school grades were so bad.
Well, I was right along with you, I think.
I think that's true, and I think it's important. You know, we live in a world right now where there's a lot of clickbait. There's a lot of give me one sentence or headline that can bring eyeballs to whatever it is I've done. And sometimes I'm as guilty about that as anybody else, but I really try to overcome it. And, you know, I really like the interview Barry does on your station. I've told you guys before, I think that, the Nashville hockey fans are well served by it. There's not a lot. Like, it used to be that every GM in every city had a weekly interview on some radio station, whether it was a sports station or somewhere else. It was normal. Now that's the exception rather than the rule. Unfortunate for us all in a lot of different places, but very fortunate for the hockey fans of Nashville. And I think that Trotz gives you a real window into what he's thinking. But as you said, he's a deep guy. He's a thoughtful guy. And you better be willing to listen to more than one sentence with him. Like that's the thing. Like, I saw his quotes and I was like, wow, that's really something. And then I went and I listened to it, and I was like, it's not really what he's saying here. But I think it's important to recognize that this is a guy who is trying to do something. The problem is what he's trying to do is one of the hardest things in the NHL to do, find a top six center.
I would grant you, Elliot, that they've got a lot of things to fix. Adam and I have debated about the stat that you throw out there, the November 1st, because I think the Predators would have been, I think you just said it, they were 31st or something last year at 5-10, and then we know what happened after that. They figured some stuff out.
That was earlier, but yes, I do remember that, yes.
Yeah, but you can't, so you never know what's going to happen, and it's not a good place to be. I think we all agree on that. They have a lot to deal with here, but I guess one of the things I wonder about that stat is how many of those teams going into the season had playoff expectations and how many are maybe taken off the top as teams that you kind of know were rebuilding and had no chance to begin with, or I don't want to say tanking because Gary Bettman might get mad at me, but you know, there are teams that kind of go in knowing they're not going to make it, and they're probably in that club of teams that are four or more points out on November 1st.
Well, I would say that, first of all, I don't have a problem with using tanking. The commissioner's mad at me all the time, so I don't mind doing that. I think that there have been teams, like Edmonton was one of those teams last year, and they came back and they still made it. I remember there was a year where Anaheim was really good, or supposed to be, and they had a really bad start, and they came back and they made it. I would say the vast majority of them are bad teams, Willie, but still, like, if you fall apart there, it's hard because of the loser point. It's really hard to catch up in this league. There's no other league that, rewards overtime losses like this. Baseball doesn't do it. The NBA doesn't do it. I mean, you saw the look on Baker Mayfield's face the other night when they lost the coin flip to the Chiefs. Like, he knew what it meant. And so, that makes it harder to catch. And the more teams that you get between you and that spot, the more trouble it is. You know, I think the Predators are still good enough. By no means do I think that their season is over. But they've dug a hole, and you can sense Trotz's disappointment for it. Now, one thing I've been kind of curious about is that one of the successes that the Predators have had in the last year was, Andrew Burnett asked Josi to, pass the puck up more, or headman the puck up more, as opposed to carrying it. And I couldn't watch last night because I was doing a charity event, but I heard you guys played better. You know, one of the things I've kind of wondered about is there any chance they kind of go back to that a little bit, where maybe to get things going while things are struggling, they kind of give Josi a little bit more freedom. I'm curious to see if you've seen any of that.
I haven't. I think one of the things that is going on is I think that Brady Shea is going through what Roman Josi went through last year. And on top of that, playing with Roman Josi in and of itself, I think is different, right?
I think
those two are still figuring each other out. And Brady Shea is trying to play a completely different system than he did with Carolina. And Elliot, as you know, that's a unique system as well. And he's played in that for a long time.
I'd also throw in the partner that Brady Shea played with in Carolina for the past several years. Brett Pesce is probably the antithesis of Roman Josi as a player when you think about the way they approach the game.
So I would say, Elliot, that's a big issue as to why they're struggling a lot 5-on-5. But they do believe that over time, and hopefully they won't run out of time, that they will get through. Just like Roman Josi busted through last year and had a great year, they believe that Shea and Josi will get it on the same page and they will be better for it.
Well, I agree with that. And the other thing too is, because it's your captain and your franchise player and your top defensive signing who you signed for a few years, you have to be committed to it. Like, that's like one of the big challenges a team faces when it's going through what the Predators are going through, is that, you all of a sudden you're losing, you're falling behind, the pressure's mounting, and you run out of patience. You're like, we have to stop with this. We have to try something else. And the challenge with that is you sign Shea for this specific reason, and you have to be committed to letting him figure it out. And I think there is something to be admired by the Predators kind of sticking with it, because I think a lot of other teams might have said, we got to do something else here. And you're committed to it, so you do have to stay with figuring it out. But that was the other thing I wanted. I went back to one of my columns last year where Burnett talked about what Josi was asked to do differently. And it's another one of those things. It worked for you guys last year, but sometimes I think, okay, we're struggling this year. What do we have to change? And do we go back to that? And I guess it's not happened yet. And maybe it won't happen. Maybe they say, no, this is still the right thing to do. But as you know, guys, desperate times sometimes call for desperate measures.
Yep, it is a big topic. And Stamkos and Marchessault, along with Shea, are all trying to find themselves here, and they have not figured it out yet. So, Elliot, I do want to ask about the another goaltender.
I got your text.
Okay.
I got
Yeah,
your
and
text.
I don't
Yeah.
know if you had a chance to go back and research
I
it, but
did.
I hear you guys talking about on your podcast on 32 Thoughts a lot about
Yeah.
goaltender interference, and it's never going to be perfect. We all know that you're never going to have everybody satisfied. But there were a couple things that I thought were interesting. It's a unique play last night because
Yes.
the it starts by saying the puck goes in the net and they decide on the ice it's no goal. And I know you guys talk about that a lot of really should that ever not there are times where it's obvious, but if it's not obvious, shouldn't the call on the ice be a goal? And then let's go figure out if it's not a goal. So let's start with that.
I can't start with that because first of all, when I saw the play last night, like I said, I was at a fundraiser last night, so I couldn't watch the game live. But when I got your text, Willie, that War and Peace that you sent me last night, I immediately went and I went to the game and I turned it on my app and I started looking through it and I was like, oh boy. And you know, I'll say this, this has been a crazy week for review. There was that play in Colorado Seattle, which I've never seen before. And ultimately they got that one right, but the process wasn't very good. There was the goal that was allowed to stand in Winnipeg, Tampa, which I really disagreed with. I disagreed with that one a lot. And when I first saw the one your game last night, I thought it should have counted. I thought it should have been a goal. And you know, the one thing too is if it's a guy's first NHL goal too, and that was supposed to be his first NHL goal, like I really think it should be a goal. Like if you think you've scored, I feel terrible for a guy who loses it. The one thing I was reminded about this week is that when video review came in, the standard that the commissioner asked for was only change it if you're dead wrong. And I've heard that everybody's been kind of reminded about that. And I guess, and still, like I said, Willie, I think that should have been a goal. I do. I guess they felt that it wasn't dead wrong. Now, I think the point you make is interesting because I do think the league wants goals. You don't want to be taking goals off. And maybe that's an interesting theory to do. But if you're a referee and you're wired and told, make the call you see, and they're told, don't guess. If you're not sure, don't call it because that leads to embarrassment. Make the call you see. And if you see no goal, then you have to make that call.
But they didn't make a call.
But,
They also kind
well,
of
eventually they
waited.
have to make a call. They said no goal, right?
Well, after huddling up, they blew the whistle, and the ref
Yes.
standing on the net doesn't really say it's in, doesn't really say no goal. They huddle up and say no goal. And what I found out today is they told the Predator bench they thought Marchessault pushed Logan Thompson, the goalie, into the crease or pushed him back across the goal line. But
Okay.
when they came out with no goal, the explanation from the league's email said that it was Delgado that impeded his ability to play his position. So that's another question I always have is if you're making a call of no goal and you say it's Marchessault, and then you go in and you're going to turn around and say it was Delgado, then something's wrong with
Yes.
that too.
Yes, there is something wrong with that. Like I said, I looked at that and I thought that should have been a goal. Now, one thing I think that's gone on is this has been a really bananas week, and the general managers meet next week in Toronto. It's not their big meeting, it's a short meeting. It's like a 3-hour meeting. And I do think all of this is going to come up. I do think there's going to be a conversation about video review and where it is and where they want it to go. And so I really work hard at trying to understand these calls. I have spent way between the Winnipeg one and the Colorado Seattle one and the Islander one and this one this week, I have spent way too much time on the phone with people who do not want to talk to me. And I think that the end of it, like I said, I thought your goal should have been a goal. And I think at the end of the day, this is going to be a big conversation next week about where we are and where we're going.
Elliot Friedman, Sportsnet NHL insider, co-host of the 32 Thoughts podcast, joining us on D-Maze, Vingan, and Donick. Elliot, great stuff as always. We'll chat next week.
All right, guys, take care. Where's D-Maze this week? Where's he?
Hey, I'm here, Adam.
I'm
Adam.
Here.
Yes, Adam's on the air. Elliot, I'm here.
I was wondering, did I put you to sleep? Were you back in Cancun? Like, what's going on?
No, there? I was listening intently.
He was listening intently.
Sure. I'm just making sure, D-Mates. I always get sad when I don't hear from you. My life is complete. So I just like to make sure you're all good.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it.
He'll give you a call after the show, okay?
All right, guys. Take care. Have a great day.
Elliot Friedman of Sportsnet joining us, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, the Titans aren't the only bad team in the NFL. And we talk a lot about parity in the NFL. But it's been a long time since the NFL has seen parody like this. We'll get to that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
You are now about to witness the strength of street knowledge.
Tune into 93.3 FM, Totally Hits Nashville, this Saturday for MTSU football. The Blue Raiders will take on Liberty at home. Pre-game starts at 10:30 and kickoff is at 12. MTSU football coverage on 93.3 FM Totally Hits Nashville is presented by Sloan's Motorcycle ATV. Also, tune into 94.9 The Fan this Saturday at 6:30 p.m. for our college football game of the week, Alabama versus LSU, presented by Twin Peaks Restaurants. Take your tailgate to Twin Peaks, home of 29-degree drafts, and wall-to-wall sports. Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, and Willie Donick here with you. So the Titans are bad. We all know that. But the Titans have a lot of company in being bad. Mm-hmm. In fact, there are 9 teams in the NFL with 2 wins. Other than the Titans, mm-hmm. the Dolphins, the Browns, the Panthers, the Jaguars, the Raiders, the Saints, the Patriots, and the Giants.
It's a lot of bad teams.
A lot of bad teams. In fact, according to ESPN, there are 9 teams with 2 or fewer wins this season, which is tied for the most through week 9 since the 1970 merger. There were 9 teams with 2 or fewer wins through week 9 in 2006. Mm-hmm. So we talk a lot about parity in the NFL. I don't think this is what they meant when you had 9 teams with two wins. What do you make of that? And what do all of those teams have in common? Willie, why don't you go first?
You know, I think you could probably trace it back to the QB, the person
you
who
certainly
takes the
could.
Snap.
Yeah,
you take the person who takes the snap initially on every play when you have the ball. I am curious how many of those teams play each other, because some of it will shake out. Because I don't look around and I think the league is more top heavy. I still don't think there are a lot of. You know, maybe a little bit more than the average year that there's more teams in position to make a run for the playoffs than there are sometimes. I still think probably when we get to it, there'll be a team that's pretty mediocre that grabs that last wild card. But, yeah, I think the numbers are what they say. I am curious. Like, you'd hate to – if you're going to finish 4-13, you might as well have the top 4 pick. But the problem is if that holds to some degree, you could – you know, you'd hate to go 4-13 and pick 8th or 9th.
So, by the way, we uh-huh. know that the Titans and Jaguars have yet to play each other this season. Mm-hmm. So those are 2 games against a 2-6 Titans team and a 2-7 Jaguars team, at least for now. Mm-hmm. The Saints and the Panthers have already played each other twice. The Saints won at the beginning of the season. The Panthers just beat the Saints, and the Saints fired their coach. So we do know that there are going to be some of these games between these teams, but 9 teams with 2 wins, Derek. It's ugly out there.
Yeah. You look at it. The most surprising one, obviously, to me is Miami, but we know why Miami is pretty much in the predicament they're in. They, you know, their quarterback missed, 5 games because of concussion, and that offense never looked the same. Now, it sort of got back into form last week with Tua, but they still end up, I think, losing that game. So outside of Miami, because they do believe they have their franchise quarterback. New England, even though, you know, you look at Drake May and say, yeah, but he's still a young guy. He's still feeling his way, and he doesn't have any talent around him. Cleveland, it just seems like they have a lot of talent but no chemistry with them. The Raiders don't have their quarterbacks. Titans don't have their quarterbacks. So if you start looking at these teams, like Willie said, the common denominator is either you don't have a quarterback or your quarterback is young. So you just see how – you just wonder how it's all going to shake out at the end of the season. So there's still a lot of parity in this league, I think, because even with the bad teams, the games are not blowouts. Look at the Titans, and listen, we chronicled half of their season already, the close losses they had, all but the Lions game, and you can kind of put that one aside, but every other game thus far has been a close game. So even though they don't have a quarterback per se, they are managing to keep the games close. So the league is getting exactly what they want, whether it be parity at the top or parity at the bottom. You still have teams with two wins or three wins that believe they can go on a run and put themselves in a position to make the playoffs. Because I do believe there's going to be a team that make the playoffs, you know, with a 9-win record. You know, so these teams that are seem to be out of it, there may be one or two that still has an outside chance at putting themselves in a position to, you know, ultimately make the playoffs with the last two games of the season, sort of as the, you know, win, we got to win, it must win type games.
One team that certainly has no questions at quarterback is the Los Angeles Chargers. Mm-hmm. Justin Herbert has had a 90-plus passer rating in all eight games this season. That is the longest streak of starts with a 90-plus passer rating by any quarterback to begin a season since Phillip Rivers in 2018. Was Phillip Rivers was Phillip Rivers still with the Chargers in 2018?
Did he come? Yeah, because after that he came.
Yes, he was.
Didn't he come here?
He went to Indianapolis.
Indianapolis.
He went to Indianapolis for a year. So I guess it's something. There's something about Chargers quarterbacks and starting the season off well. But Justin Herbert, no such issues as we've been discussing with these other teams.
I find that interesting in this way. Mm-hmm. That, first of all, Justin Herbert is doing this with a bad foot, right? He's had the plantar fasciitis, so and that is affected him. He's also had I forget what happened with his non-throwing hand that got messed up too, but he's played through some stuff. But he's always had the talent, right? He has got eye-popping arm strength and impressiveness, and his team hasn't put it together. So what did Jim Harbaugh do? He didn't go out and get three new wide receivers and, you know, et cetera. He went the other way. He said, I'm going to make Justin Herbert better by giving him a better running game and a better offensive line. And that has worked really, really well for him. Like, they got rid of some of their wide receivers, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And they got rid of Mike Williams and Keenan Allen.
Yeah.
Right. And they're better.
And their top receiver is a rookie, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, Ladd McConkey has been a nice pickup. I didn't know how good he would be. That's a great eye for talent. And where was McConkey picked? Was he a first round? He wasn't a first round.
He was
round
a second. He was an early second round pick. He was the 34th pick in the draft.
So there's a hit right there on a second round pick. But it's not like they're lighting it up by throwing the ball 35 or 40 times, right? They're running the heck out of it, and then a talented quarterback is in good situations to connect. So it's an interesting philosophy to learn from.
Matthew on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com about the nine teams with two wins. What those teams all have in common. Three things. One, bad quarterbacks. Two, impulsive/bad owner. Or three, bad front office.
Well, there could be a possibility. I mean, that could be the case. I don't, outside of possibly Carolina, because it's sort of like in your face, because they had the number one pick in the draft last year in Bryce Young, and it seems to not be working out with him. So they're going to be more in the spotlight. So you can look at Carolina, whether they had Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, now Bryce Young, Andy Dalton. It just seems like no matter who's come through there, they haven't had a quarterback that has played consistent, good football. But then you see guys like Baker Mayfield leave, and he has, you know, a better sort of year with Tampa. Then you see Sam Darnold leave, and he has a better year, you know, by way of San Francisco, but he has a better year with the Minnesota Vikings. So, yeah, that would tend to say, you know, along with everything else that has gone on with the Carolina Panthers trading away, you know, Christian McCaffrey, DJ Moore, all this other stuff. Yeah, they wouldn't be the poster child for good organizations. They would be a poster child for more bad organizations. But the other organization, I don't know if they, outside of the quarterback, I don't know if they're a good organization or not.
I mean, I can speak to the Saints as a Saints fan. Mm-hmm. Gail Benson, who owns the Saints, I wouldn't consider her a bad owner. Mm-hmm. I would think of it similarly to Amy Adams Strunk. When the Titans were winning, people thought Amy Adams Strunk was a great owner.
Exactly.
Then they start losing, and all of a sudden you're worried about the ownership. I mean, Mickey Loomis has been the general manager of the Saints for God knows how long now. And he boxed them into a corner, no mm-hmm. doubt about it. We talked about that earlier this week. And you saw the beginning of the fire sale with Marshawn Lattimore being traded to the Commanders at the trade deadline. But when you look at those other teams, you see the Giants. That's the Mara family, correct? The Mara family mm-hmm. owns the Giants and David Tepper and Carolina. And let's see, who else? Is it Mark Davis with the Raiders?
Yes, Mark Davis. Yeah.
Yep.
Shad Khan with the Jaguars. The Haslam family with the Browns. Is it Stephen Ross? Is he the owner of the Dolphins? Is that the right name?
I believe so.
Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't think anybody would consider Robert Kraft a bad owner.
No.
So, I mean, I think the issue with owners is, look, some of those owners I mentioned.
Yeah, some of them you could say.
Pretty bad.
Yeah. But for the most part, I think the Dolphins are winning. They've been a winning organization the last couple of years, so you can't say entirely their owner is bad. Now, he's done some things, you know, you're just like, dude, why would you do that in regards to asking, you know, apparently or asking Coach Flores to, you know, allegedly throw games. So you can't be an owner and be doing that. You know, so you can use that as a mark against them. But they've been a winning franchise the last couple of years prior to this season, and we know why they were not winning now, because of the quarterback situation, him being hurt. But some of these other owners, you named off, you know, the Mara family, they've won Super Bowls. They've been a model organization, you know. So some don't have a quarterback, but that doesn't mean that they're, or you know, that the owner – or the front office is bad. They just hadn't found their quarterback. And some, like the Carolina Panthers, or like you said, New Orleans Saints, even though their owner isn't bad, but because of the GM put them in a box, you know, boxed them in, now they're not a good team. And it's showing, because they don't have too many good players. They just traded away one of their best players in Marshawn Lattimore, you know, because they're trying to get out of this sort of hole that they've dug themselves in. So, every team, just because they're bad, don't mean that the ownership is bad. A lot of times it's just you don't have that quarterback.
So Jared,
or right tackle.
Has chimed in. He quote tweeted this segment on the 102.5 The Game Twitter and said, because they don't have a right tackle. Now, I can't speak to the right tackle situation of every team that has two wins in the NFL.
Exactly.
I do know, however, because I've heard this name shoved through my eardrums.
Uh-huh.
The starting right tackle for the New York Giants is Jermaine Illuminor, who Jared has lusted after.
How well are they doing?
How many wins, exactly, Jared, do the Giants have with that starting right tackle?
Can they run a football?
Two. I know it well.
Can they run a football? No, not really. They can't run a football. Not really.
615-737-1025. We'll wrap up the show next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vinyan, 1025-1063. The Game. D-Maze, Vingan, and Donick, 1025-1063, The Game. Stillman and Company coming up next here. I'm sure Jared will have some thoughts on the Titans. He called yesterday a big game for the Predators. He doesn't break out the big game very often. The Predators fall 3-2 to the Washington Capitals. They're back in action tonight, as Willie said, against the defending Stanley Cup champion, Florida Panthers. Willie, Have we any word on the statuses of Colton Sissons and Tommy Novak for tonight's game?
Definitely up in the air. Do not know. But it doesn't look good, I think, for either one, especially given it's a back-to-back, I would say. That's just me speculating. I don't know. But it would not surprise me if they didn't have either one in there tonight, which leaves, you know, that's two less centers on a team that is, you know, obviously, based on what you hear from the GM, not satisfied with what they're getting from their centers. And you're playing the defending Stanley Cup champs.
Who have a lot of really good centers.
A lot of really good centers. Four, really, when you get down to it. So this is a tough matchup, which is I didn't hear what Jared's reasoning was for last night being a big game, but I think probably had to do with the fact that the back end of the back-to-back is a rested Florida Panther team.
And it was also just because of what Barry said and the team needing to get back on the right track.
Yeah, and I think the team played pretty inspired last night. I didn't have any problem with the way they battled. I think they didn't catch any breaks. I thought the it was poorly managed. This is just my opinion, and yeah, I'm looking at it through Nashville's lens. But I just think that they botched that goaltender interference, and they also hit four different players hit the post in the second period alone, and Juuso Parsonen hit both posts. So they're not. I think. And I asked Barry Trotz at the end of the second period, I said, are the Predators leading the league in hitting the post? And he says he believes that that is the case. So I do think that they will start getting more bounces eventually. But still, there's some things that they've got to get right that didn't get a ton better last night. And we mentioned it while Elliot was on. The Roman Josi-Brady Shea pair is still struggling to find the chemistry. They're not getting the great individual performances that both of those guys have in them, and it needs to happen sooner than later. But there were a lot of positives from last night. I thought Phil Tomasino played a really good game. Zach LaRue is playing well. Mark Delgado. So three young players that I think are making some strides. But at the end of the day, they still need, you know, the big guns to carry their weight.
Like Al Davis say, just win, baby, win. I don't want to hear about all that other stuff.
Just win, baby.
Yeah, just win and start to build momentum and, you know, let the rest take care of itself. So
quickly, Willie, if Colton Sissons and Tommy Novak are unavailable, I know there are players on the team who can shift to center, but should we expect at least one call-up from the American League?
No.
Okay.
Mark Jankowski is a center, so he could play. They would still have four centers.
Okay.
Well, if that's the case,
don't be expecting any.
They don't have the roster spots to make a move.
That's true.
Right now,
that's true.
They're at 23, so they'd have to send somebody down. So and it's a back to back situation. So there will not be a roster move for tonight's game.
Well, you got to play with the guys that came to the dance with you. So ain't no bringing nobody. Yep. Oh no! By the way, Jared, the guy that you wanted, the right tackle that you wanted. Illuminor.
Jermaine Illuminor.
Jermaine Illuminor.
I know more about him than I ever need to know.
And I know, listen, PFF isn't the end-all, be-all, but he's basically a D student right now, trending toward an F student. So that guy that you wanted isn't playing well either. Now, granted, Nicholas isn't playing well. He's at an F. Leroy Watson isn't playing well. He's at an F. But an F or a D, you ain't passing. It ain't good enough. So you have Illuminor, it still would have been the same Tennessee Titan team.
I guess you
thank
can
you
say
for it. Illuminating us.
Yes, exactly. Willie just stole my pun. Yes. That's exactly what I was about to say. Oh man. Okay. Well, Willie, we will see you tonight.
Great minds think alike.
We will see you tonight on FanDuel Sports Network. Predators and Panthers puck drop at 6. Pregame starts at 5. Right here on 102.5, 106.3. The game. Stillman and Company coming up next.
Be loved, love on your people. Have a wonderful and blessed Thursday. Take care of yourself in peace.